get Michael up, and he's going to talk to us about how the future of B2B marketing is about activating the talent within your organization. Michael.
Thank you. I have no idea what he just said, but it sounded pretty awesome. So thank you for that. That was great. So I actually know something about all of you. You're actually the smartest people at this conference. Did you know that? And we know that because you chose this session. So congrats to you. We titled it specifically to try to draw in the smartest people. So thank you for coming. I want to start with just this kind of concept that we are all in the business of selling change. And I'm going to show you in a second some stats on this word disruption. And we've heard that time and time again over the last 2.5 days. And I think it's common for us to roll our eyes when we hear the word disruption or customer-centric or customer experience or empathy. And I'm actually going to use all of those words in this presentation. But I want you to start to think about not just the fact that disruption exists, but the fact that we are all in the business of selling change. You're all here because you want to grow in your career. You want to help to grow your business. You want to better attract and convert the customers that you're trying to bring into your business. And so we're all here to drive some sort of change, but I want you to really truly believe and understand, and even hopefully at the end of this presentation, know how to sell the change that's needed in order to meet the needs of our customers going forward. I've got 6 things that I want you to walk away with. So whether you're just starting out with content marketing or you're kind of in the middle of the road and you've got a program going, but you're not necessarily seeing results, or even if you're in the mature stages of content marketing strategy, I'm hoping that you're going to get at least 2, 4, or 6 tips that are going to help you to drive the future of your business, drive the future of your marketing strategy to deliver better leads, more revenue, and a higher return on investment. So that's what we're going to talk about. Okay, so like I said, we're all in the business of selling change. So I know you know this, that disruption is happening, but I don't believe that everyone else that you work with understands this. And so here's just a stat. In the last 15 years, 52% of the Fortune 500 companies have completely disappeared. And this rate of disruption that's happening is accelerating. So in 1955, the average life expectancy of a company was 75 years. 2 years ago, the average life expectancy of a company was just 15 years. If your company is older than 15 years, you are already past your average company's life expectancy. So that's a message we need to deliver to our boss. We need to deliver to our peers in sales and customer service and on the product teams and in the executive suite, because what we're doing today isn't working. And what we're doing today, even if it is working, isn't going to work tomorrow. So here's just an example of the only 59 companies that were in the Fortune 500 in 1959 and still again in 2017. Maybe some of your companies are on this list. Yeah, good for you. However, based on the rate of disruption and the rate of change, there's a good chance you're going to fall off that list. So congratulations to you, but you've got to change the way that you're marketing and selling and communicating to the audiences that we're all trying to reach. Okay, I like to use a picture of my kids to try to explain the rate of disruption, the increasing rate of disruption that's happening in the world today. So these are my 4 beautiful children. Of course, that's a subjective opinion. But interestingly, 2 years, well, now it'll be a year ago, in May, my daughter was celebrating her 15th birthday. She's going to be 16 on May 5th. So Cinco de Mayo, my daughter celebrated her 15th birthday. And on that day, I got an email from LinkedIn. And LinkedIn said, hey, guess what? It's our birthday too. We're 15 years old too. I thought that was really interesting. And they asked me and my wife to share a picture of what we were doing 15 years ago. And we couldn't obviously share that picture. But it hit me as a marketer. It hit me as really interesting that LinkedIn is only 15 years old. And if you have kids, you know how disruptive kids can be in your life. But when I look at the young face of my daughter there on the right, you can see she's still relatively young. She can't drive yet. She can't vote yet. She can't drink yet. She's probably doing some of those things that I don't know about, but she's not allowed to legally. Right? So she's relatively young. 15 years old is the age of the world's first commercially viable social media platform. So think about the impact of that in the marketing that we're using today. So of course I had to look at my other kids to see if there were some parallels. So you probably know where this is going. Now, not the same day, but by about 2 weeks, my daughter shares a birthday with Facebook, the world's most popular social media network. So you can see the age of the world's most popular social media network on the face of my second daughter there, Ava, on the left-hand side. Relatively young, she still has braces, right? She hasn't hit puberty yet, right? Relatively young, and yet the dramatic impact that Facebook has had on the world and the way that we communicate with each other. This is my son, James. He celebrated his 10th birthday. Now it'll be 2 years ago, so he'll be 12 this year. And within a month, that was he celebrated his birthday, his 10th birthday, and the iPhone's introduction here in the United States was also 10, the same year that he turned 10. So you can see the age of the impact of digital mobile technology on the world on the face of my young son there, James. So you can see digital, social, mobile technologies, the age of those, relatively young, and you can see them on the faces of my kids. Now, number four, his name is Luke. We all have different ways of saying this. Oops, baby. God's plan, not our plan. You might have some other words that you've used if this has happened to you. However, we love him to death and can't imagine life without him. And sure enough, he shares a birthday with Snapchat. And I think like most of us in B2B, we're still trying to figure out what to do with Snapchat, like we're still trying to figure out what to do with my young son here. But the point is that my kids are still young, right? They're still relatively young. This is the age of the social, digital, mobile platforms and technologies that have dramatically disrupted the world that we live in. And no function has been disrupted more than the function of marketing. And that's why you're all here today, to learn how do we break through that disruption and win in today's marketplace. Because today we're all connected. We're all the most important source of news and information for each other. You've heard that repeated time and time again in the last 2.5 days. This has dramatically disrupted and disintermediated the importance of the marketing communications that we're using to try to reach and engage and even convert new customers for our business. And our content today has to compete with this. Pictures of babies and kittens and puppies. This is my favorite one. This is a cat riding a Roomba, wearing a shark costume, chasing a duck. How does your latest white paper compete with that? That's the challenge that we're facing in today's world. That's why we need to think about the future of marketing and the role of communications and the role of content in the future of marketing. All right. Now, marketing has a marketing problem. What do I mean by that? You've heard this said in certain ways, I think, but not so explicitly. I want you to think about if you asked your mom or your spouse who maybe isn't in marketing what marketing is, what would they say? What's marketing? It's getting you to buy stuff. It's advertising. And interestingly, that people usually think, has anybody seen the Fyre Festival documentary? Okay. Now, marketing wasn't specifically implicated in that, but it was explicitly like implicated in that, right? It was kind of like, you know, there's a jerk who manipulated people into spending money based on a video of influencers that looked beautiful on an island that people wanted to go to, right? And so marketing was really implicated in that documentary because most people think that marketing is about manipulating people with propaganda to do something they wouldn't normally do, generally with ads or some form of advertising. Marketing is more than that, isn't it? Marketing is more than just advertising. In college, I learned that marketing is a two-way communication between a company and its customers. How much of your marketing looks like a two-way communication between your company and its customers? So I think it's our job to not only to sell to our executives that we have to change, that we're being disrupted, but also that marketing is more than just propaganda. Marketing is more than just talking about who we are, what we sell, and why we're better. So I think we need to fix the marketing problem that marketing has. Does anybody know who the CMO of Coca-Cola is, the world's most well-known brand? Anybody know? No one? It's because he or she doesn't exist. Their CMO left 2 years ago, and the CEO of Coca-Cola said, you know what, we don't need a CMO. We're going to take our head of sales, and we're going to call him the chief growth officer and put him in charge of marketing. So this is what he had to say about marketing. He said, in order to make people love Coca-Cola, we need to show ads of people who love drinking Coca-Cola. That's awesome. That's actually insane, is what that is. And it's interesting that he's called the chief growth officer because their sales have been down 2% worldwide in the last couple of years and down 7% here in North America. So he's not the chief growth officer. He's the chief decline officer. And they're declining because they're making us all fat with, you know, brown sugary water. And he's trying to show ads of people who love getting fat drinking brown sugary water. So, you know, I don't envy his position, but that's not marketing. That's not what marketing is supposed to be. 80%, this is a Fortinet's group survey, asked CEOs what they think of CMOs and their marketing department. 80%, you've probably seen this, it was written up in Harvard Business Review about a year ago. 80% of CEOs are unhappy with CMOs, and it's only CMOs that they're unhappy with. Only 20% of them are dissatisfied with CIOs and CHROs and CSOs and COOs and CFOs. They're happy with them. It's only marketing they're unhappy with. Why? If we ask CEOs what marketing should do to make them happy, what would they say? What's that? Revenue. Leads. Trackable, quantifiable, measurable revenue. Return on investment. That's what CEOs are expecting us to do in marketing. I think you're all feeling the pressure, but then you go back to the office and somebody says, hey, I need a new white paper. So what do? We create a new white paper. So let me kind of run you through the pain that I've experienced in my own career, 25 years as a corporate marketer. So, you know, we all want to show ROI. Here are some scenarios of what really happens. So, you know, you go back to the office and somebody says, you know, hey, I'm the new CEO and our blue logo, I really like yellow. So can we create, like, maybe we should spend $3 million to completely rebrand the company. Let's go get an agency. We'll spend a lot of money. And that's what you're going to do because the CEO asked you to do that. Maybe you talk to your sales team and they say, we need a new brochure. We need a pen with our logo on it. We need a centrally located LED lit two-story booth at the central location at the next conference we're going to. We need stress balls. We need all of the things that salespeople ask us for on a regular basis. And so we go off and we do those things. Maybe you're interested in running campaigns. You want to stick naked babies in bowls filled with your products. You're going to tweet some stuff. You're going to Facebook Live. You're going to do a podcast. Maybe you're going to put a banner on the side of a website that no one is going to look at, or a billboard on the side of a highway that no one is going to look at because they're going 75 miles an hour. But we do that stuff because that's what marketing is supposed to do, because that's what people think marketing is. Now, we all want to show ROI, but this is the stuff that we do. Maybe now you're even being asked by the HR team to help recruit really good looking people, right? That's what HR's job is. And now they're asking us to help them. So they want us to run ads about what a great place to work we are with pictures of beautiful people so that we can attract and retain more beautiful talent to our workplace. So now even HR is asking us to do stuff for them. So we're creating content for the HR organization. Your CFO and your COO is asking us to comply with new procedures and keep costs down. Everyone across the organization is asking us to create more content. So does this resonate with everyone, right? This is why we know we have to deliver a return on investment, but we end up doing a lot of stuff. And at the end of the day, what does the CEO say? I'm unhappy with marketing because what's the ROI of all that stuff? So that's the sort of the rock and the hard place that we're all feeling, the pressure and the challenge that we're all feeling in marketing. So what's a marketer to do? I think it's important to understand that, you know, maybe definitionally, marketing with content is not the same thing as content marketing. We all market with content. Everyone expects us to market with content. So we create lots of stuff, but that's not content marketing. Content marketing has a strategy. Content marketing has a frequency. Content marketing is obsessed, if not focused, on customers and delivering value. And content marketing has a return on investment. Most of those things are not true of marketing with content. And so that's the first thing I want you to think about. Are you marketing with content, or do you actually have a content marketing strategy? We heard this from Serious Decisions on the first day. They've now confirmed for the fourth year in a row that 65% on average of B2B content goes completely unused. It's never seen by anybody. No one ever reads it. No one downloads it. No one likes it. No one shares it. No one fills out a form to see it. 65% on average, 60 to 70% for some of the worst companies, of the content we create goes completely unused. That's according to Serious Decisions, confirmed here just a day and a half ago. 56%, this is my own survey of customers and about a half a dozen, mostly B2B and a number of technology companies, looking at demand generation campaigns with the goal of generating leads. 56% of them didn't generate a single lead, zero. Not one lead, not five, zero leads, even though the goal was to generate leads for those campaigns. So why do we do all this stuff? Why do we create all this content? Why do we generate all these campaigns that we know aren't going to work? Why do we do all this stuff? It's this guy's fault. He made us do it, right? Behind every bad marketing idea, behind every bad piece of content, there's an executive who asked us for it. And I think it's easy for us to point the finger at the old white guy and say, he made me do it, right? But I think we're all accountable. the disruption that's happening to the world, the disruption that's happening to our company, the massive disruption that's happening in the way that we communicate and market our products and services, it's on us. We're accountable for driving the change and redefining really what marketing needs to be. It starts with this belief, as Kim famously said, right? You all love Kim, right? We're just not that interesting. We're just not that important. We're not that special, right? And that it starts with the belief that we need to earn the trust that we want to gain with our audiences. So it starts with this understanding that we're just not that special. So I believe everything in life can be explained in a Venn diagram. So this is my Venn diagram definition of content marketing. On the left is our natural instinct. We love our babies, our products, and our services. And so we want to talk about how great they are. And that's all the stuff that we publish. That's all the stuff that we create, 65% of which never goes in front of a customer. But we do that because it's our natural instinct. We have to resist that natural instinct because on the right-hand side is what your audience is actually interested in. Now, again, we're competing with pictures of babies and kittens and puppies. So we have to try to find the intersection between what we want to say or what we know, the solutions to the problems that we have, and what our customers, the problems that they actually want to solve. So here's just a quick example of a company that understands or how a company could understand the use of empathy. So GE sells medical equipment and they want to talk all day long about the benefits of upgrading your 1.5 terahertz MRI machine to a 3.0 terahertz MRI machine. But not that many people are interested. Now they're looking at trying to solve the needs of radiologists. And just using Google Autofill, you can spend a lot of money on personas, or you could just go to Google Autofill and type your persona's name in and see what Google tells you. Google tells me that radiologists are concerned about making money. They're concerned about stress. They're concerned about their education. They're concerned about being more efficient at work. Google Autofill will tell you these things. So go create content, if you're GE, about how much money radiologists make, how they can be more efficient at work, how they can be less stressed at work. You could probably fill every persona's name and follow it. It would be salaries, efficiency, and stress, because we're all people. And that's what your personas are interested in. So GE, instead of talking about a 3.0 terahertz MRI machine upgrade, should talk about how radiologists can be happier at work. Does that make sense? That's how we have a little empathy for the audiences that we're trying to reach. And I'll show you a couple of other tools that'll demonstrate that in a second. But how do we explain the importance of empathy to an executive who doesn't have any? This is kind of, you know, sort of the problem, right? The old white guy here just doesn't have a lot of empathy. He just wants to sell more stuff. And the answer is pretty simple. Jerry Maguire gave us that answer years ago. We have to show him or her the money. We have to show them that content marketing, that the strategic, customer-focused, empathetic approaches actually deliver more return on investment. So this is just a really, really brief example of how I learned this in my own career. So SAP, I worked there for 4 years, from about 2007 to 2011, and we named, I was the first head of digital marketing there, and we did a lot of performance-based marketing, but not there really was no customer focus on our website. If you went to our website, it looked like most of our websites do today still. This is who we are, what we sell, why we're better. And in 2011, SAP felt the disruption that was happening in the enterprise software space. Salesforce.com, their ads literally said, no software, buy a subscription-based service from us. And so our new CEO at the time, Bill McDermott, saw this disruption happening, and he gave a keynote at SAP's annual conference of 30,000 people, and he said, you know, I'm not going to talk about our products and our innovations. I want to talk about how technology is driving innovation and change for the world, to make a better world for all of us. He gave this keynote in front of 30,000 people. There were people laughing and crying. He got a standing ovation. It was one of the most amazing speeches I've ever seen. And at the end, he walked down and he turned to the CMO who was sitting right there in the front. He said, why don't we do that on our website? Because that speech seemed to go over pretty well. And so the CMO turned to me and said, I want you to fix this problem. And it took me a year of trying to convince my fellow marketers that we needed to put thought leadership or customer-focused content on the front page of our website. You know, similar to kind of this approach of thought leadership, how technology is driving innovation for the world, not talking about products. And so I'll bore you some of the details, but the simple approach that we took was just to go through a basic content marketing strategy. And we answered these questions in a very specific order. We started with, if you know Simon Sinek, we started with the why. Why are we doing this for our business? And why are we doing this for our customers? So we looked at that Venn diagram and tried to figure out what's the intersection between our why and our customers' why. Then we looked at the destinations, our owned media properties. Content marketing is owned media. Social media is not content marketing because you don't own Facebook. You don't own YouTube. If you're not publishing content on an owned media property like your website, you're not doing content marketing. You're marketing with content. So look at the destination. Then we looked at who could support us. What agency resources did we have? What budgets did we need to put in place? Then we talked about what content to create. Most people want to jump right to the what. Well, we looked at what content do we need to create? How do we map that content to the buyer journey? I'll show you a picture of that in a second. When do we start to distribute it? What's the right frequency with content? I'll show you a graphic on that in a second as well. And then how are we going to measure the return on investment? How are we going to show ROI to the CMO and to the CEO who thought that this was a good idea? So this is the first tip that I have for you. If you're just getting started, start by documenting your content marketing strategy. The Content Marketing Institute states that companies that document their content marketing strategy are 5 times more likely to be successful. So if you want to be successful with content marketing, document your strategy. Ask these simple questions in a very specific order to document what you're trying to do. The second thing, and this is something that I've asked audiences, you know, would you choose quality over quantity? And almost 100% of the time, people say they want quality. And this is not to say that you shouldn't focus on quality, but the bottom line is that quality is a subjective matter. Quantity is not. The more frequently you publish, the more traffic you're going to get, and the more frequently you publish, the more leads you're going to deliver to your business. This is HubSpot research that shows that when you move from monthly or a few times a month to a few times a week to a few times a day, you start to see not a linear rate of return, but an exponential rate of return. And I've mapped this with at least a half a dozen clients who move from each one of these stages to the next, and sure enough, it maps right along this growth curve. When you more frequently commit to publishing customer-valued content, you're going to get more traffic and you're going to get more leads. So that was the second thing we committed to doing at SAP. The third, and I mentioned this in the how section, was how do we map content to the buyer journey? And what we looked at was, and you can use Google Trends to do this, the number of people that search for cloud computing was 300 times higher than the number of people that searched for SAP cloud computing. If you use Google Trends to do the same research, you'll see that the number of people searching for the category of your solution is usually on average 100 times higher than the number of people that might be interested in your solution. You can look at the math and back it up with math, just looking at search trends, to see that there are more people in the early stages of the buying journey. They're asking simple questions like, what is cloud computing? Was the question we answered for SAP. What is big data? And then we started getting into how can cloud computing solve some of my business problems? And then we started getting into how SAP could support those needs. So map content to the buyer journey based on the questions people ask in search, based on the content types that are relevant to each stage in the buyer journey. So that was the third tip. So again, if you're just getting started, if you do these three things, you're on your way to a more effective, future-driven content marketing strategy. Okay? All right. This is every presentation I've ever given has a chart that goes up and to the right. So this is mine. If you want to steal this one, you can just call it your own. It's fine. But this was actually the organic search traffic from search and social that we were able to achieve with our content marketing platform at SAP. And this was great. And I showed this to executives and some of them thought it was interesting. But the bottom line is this is vanity metrics. I was in the business of showing them the return on investment. That's the platform that we built. It's called SAP Digital's Magazine. Still exists today. 10,000 contributors on that platform. But we needed to show return on investment. So I actually wrote a book called The Content Formula. I'm not pitching it. If you send me an email, I'll send you a free PDF version of it. It's really more of a workbook than anything else. But we document all of the formulas that you can use to show the return on investment from content marketing, whether your objective is reach, engagement, conversion, or retention and advocacy. So any stage, any objective that you might have in your marketing programs, you can show a return on investment. Here's just a couple examples. We generated 500,000 organic search visits, and our average cost per click in paid search was $2. Now, I had that in gray because it wasn't hard-earned revenue. That was, some people call it equivalent media value. The equivalent media value of our traffic was about $1 million. I never showed that to an executive. However, we did convert $250,000 dollars in actual revenue from the email nurture that we did to our subscribers. We also ran demand generation campaigns, webinars, and white papers that we hung on the sides of articles, and people that registered for those turned into more than $500,000 in actual revenue. So $750,000 or more in actual revenue after just 1 year, and we only spent $100,000. So we had a 6.9 or 7x return on investment. And I've seen this with client after client after client. The growth curves hold consistent. If you commit to documenting your strategy, you publish frequently, and you map content to the buyer journey, you too can achieve a return on investment. Good? Yeah, pretty awesome, right? So good. All right. So what do I want you to take home? What I want you to take home is that content marketing is a financial digital asset with real value that grows over time. So if you run an ad, you're going to spend money and maybe you get a result, maybe you don't. But if you get a result, that's great, good for you. The second you stop spending money, what happens to that result? It goes to zero. Content marketing is different. When you commit to consistently showing value for your customers, bringing value back to your business, you create a financial asset with real value that grows over time. This is a statement to give to your CFO as to why you should invest in content marketing versus other types of campaign-based marketing approaches. So what does this look like? So this is another chart that goes up and to the right. You can steal this one too. This is actually about 12 of clients that I've worked with in mostly B2B, a heavy concentration in B2B tech, but also industrial manufacturing as well. And in some cases, it's the sort of the second year of their content marketing program. But for most of them, for 75% of them, it's the first year. And what you can see is they invested a consistent amount, the green bars, a consistent amount of investment in content marketing. It's the number of articles published. It didn't grow. It was consistent. They committed to 2 times a week or 4 times a week on average. But what happened is over time, they saw an increase, an accelerating or compounding increase in the amount of traffic that they got. And that correlated to an average conversion rate that also accelerated or compounded over time. So there was a compounding rate of return or return on investment from content marketing. It's kind of like your 401k, right? You invest a certain amount in your retirement account and it's a consistent amount. You don't grow the amount you invest over time, but that money, it accrues and you start to see a return on that investment that it compounds over time. So that's how you can start to show the return on investment from content marketing. So I want to just give you a couple of quick examples. This is Jill Curry. She was the CMO at JLL, which is a commercial real estate company. And she was there 14 years and she was named CMO. And she found that their ads were ignored. Their content wasn't being used. Their campaigns weren't generating leads, but their buyers were looking for help. And she committed herself to trying to help understand how do we serve the needs of our buyers. And she looked around the organization and she said, you know what? Not just in marketing, our whole company is filled with smart people who want to share their expertise in the commercial real estate market. So why don't I train them and turn them into an army of volunteer storytellers? And that's what she did. In fact, I think they won the Content Marketer of the Year award last year at Content Marketing Institute because of the effort that Jill put forth in trying to train their entire organization to become storytellers. She did this because of, this is some stats from LinkedIn that found that your company's employees have 20 times the followers on average of the company's followers. So in other words, if you have a corporate social account, if you add up all of the followers from that account and all of the followers from your employees' account, you'll see that your employees have 20 times more followers. So doesn't it make sense to activate your employees to create and share content? You can't force them. You don't want them to share press releases. Have them create the content. They're going to want to share it even more. This is another stat from Talent Connect that found that just 3% of employees generate 30% of the clicks to corporate content. Just 3% of your employees are generating the large majority of the clicks that are happening to your corporate content. So activate the employees inside your organization. So tip 5 is commit to building a team of storytellers. Look at training your entire organization. Encourage them to share what they know and share what they love on your corporate website, on their social media platforms, because you're going to attract buyers, you're going to attract talent to your HR organization, and everyone's going to win because it's going to be authentic, expert-driven, customer-focused content. So that's tip 5. All right, so what gets in the way of change? And I'm kind of running out of time, but I want to leave you with just this last story. Because what gets in the way of change, the thing that we're all in the job, in the business of selling, is the org chart, right? Now, the org chart exists, you know, as boxes and lines, really to show us who's above us and who's below us and who's beside us. And really, it's a model for decision-making. The guy or the gal at the top makes the decisions, and the rest of us have to do what we're told. That's kind of the scenario that I started with. But the problem is the org chart is really outdated in today's consumer-centric world. Employees are not happy. Almost a third of employees, according to Gallup, are disengaged or engaged from their company. More than half of employees are disengaged, and 17% are actively disengaged. That means they're stealing pens and pencils, they're breaking their laptops, they're calling in sick. Maybe some of you are these actively disengaged employees. So employees are not happy with the current organizational model. But what would a new model look like? I think the real org chart exists to really represent sort of the situations that happen in real life, right? You've got the silent partner at the top who calls the shots, and they're probably having an affair with somebody three layers down. And you've got, you know, somebody who owes favors, and there's an office pool, and there's, you know, somebody whose kids are all on the same football team, and somebody, a bunch of people who go to church together, right? There's secret resentment, secret affairs. There's lots of crazy drug dealing happening, right? This is what goes on in the real org chart, because org charts are filled with us, with real people. So why don't our org charts reflect the most important person to every one of our organizations? And who's that? That's our customer. Now, what would that look like? So I tried to sort of create a visual for what that would look like. I call it the bullseye, but I think it's easy to say that. It was easy for me to draw that. It's not easy to think about how you would enact that inside your organization. And so I want to tell you the story of somebody who did that. The way that she was able to do it was by asking one simple question: what's in it for the customer? She looked around at the organization and saw lots of stuff happening that wasn't happening for customer value or customer benefits. And so this person said, you know what, I'm gonna ask what's in it for the customer. I'm gonna put the customer at the center of our org chart, even though it might mean talking up against some of the executives in our organization. So with just a few minutes left here, I wanna kind of go quickly through this story. This is a story of Lili Lepine, who got everyone on board with this idea of what's in it for the customer. Now, Lili was the director of marketing, digital marketing for Capgemini. And she did blog posts and tweets and press releases like we all do. She got asked to do lots of stuff, and most of it didn't work. Capgemini is the number four player in the global consulting services market. They compete with KPMG, Deloitte, and Accenture. And their CEO looked at KPMG, Deloitte, and Accenture, and he saw that they did a lot of golf sponsorships. They sponsored golfers. They sponsored LPGA tournaments. They took out full-page ads in Golf Digest. So what do you think the CEO of Capgemini thought that they should do? Yeah, we should probably sponsor a golfer. And the CMO at Capgemini was pretty excited. She was a golfer as well. And she was really interested in that $20 million budget that she was going to get to sponsor a golfer. So she was pretty excited about that. Sent out an email to the whole team: we're going to sponsor a golfer. This is going to be awesome. And Lili said, well, what's in it for the customer? I mean, I'm the head of digital marketing. I did a survey and I found that only 17% of our prospects actually love golf. The other 83% don't care about golf. Maybe they used to once, but not as much anymore. So if we spend $20 million sponsoring a golfer, we're going to miss the 83% of people that don't care about golf. So what's in it for the customer? And, you know, she got a lot of pushback. So she said, you know what? I looked to the insights and the surveys, and I've spoken to customers, and they have lots of questions, and we have expertise that could solve those questions. I think we can reach them using the keywords that they use. I'll show you how in a second. I think we can engage them using the content that they're engaging with. And if we do that, I think we can, if we map content to their buyer journey, I think we can convert and even retain them by starting to tell their stories, profile the customers that we have and how awesome they are and how they solved their challenges. Not talking about us, but talking about them, using the keywords they use, the content they engage with, converting them to sales, and then celebrating those customer successes. So that's what she did. So she put together a business plan. She did a lot of research. She used BuzzSumo. She typed in, you know, here's just an example with content marketing, but she typed in the keywords that they were interested in, and she saw the content that their audience was engaging with. She used this tool, Answer the Public. Is anybody not familiar with Answer the Public? So this is my gift to you. This is a free tool, answerthepublic.com. Type in a keyword that you want to rank for, and it'll tell you all the questions your customers are asking. The who, the what, the when, the why, the how, the where, the you versus somebody else, the thing versus another thing. All the questions that your entire editorial strategy is right there in a mind map. Beautiful, right? So Lili used these free tools. I helped her to document her strategy. I helped her to build the business case, but it was really her that used these customer insights to define a content marketing strategy. And then she had to go and put a pitch in front of their executives. She said, listen, for 0.1% of the cost of sponsoring a golfer, I think we can raise awareness, the goal that you wanted. I can elevate the experts, the consultants inside our organization, and you can hold me accountable to 1 million visitors to our website. So that was her pitch to the organization, and they gave her 1 year. And after 1 year, sure enough, she brought in 1 million visitors to their website. She also stumbled upon $1 million in new sales. So she was pretty proud of herself. Wouldn't you love to stumble upon $1 million in new sales? So she thought she was, you know, going to get approval to run this the second year. But the CEO said, nope, I think we should sponsor a golfer. And the CMO said, I want the $20 million. And Lili pushed back again. So she followed the path. And what she found was that their experts were writing content that answered the needs of their customers. And then those customers were reading that content and connecting with their experts on LinkedIn. And that's how 3 or 4 or 5 RFPs got sent request for proposal got sent to their consultants, and some of those closed to $1 million. So she said, you know what? If we double our efforts with content and we actually put a connect with us on LinkedIn right next to the article, I think we can double our sales. $2 million. So she was given a second year. Do you think she doubled her sales? Who thinks she doubled her sales? Of course it's more. Come on. Got a $24 million in sales. She spent $100,000 in the second year. $24 million in sales, the highest return on investment of any marketing program that Capgemini has ever run before or since. So think about that. That's a 48x, $48 returned for every dollar spent. And all happened because she asked what's in it for the customer. So I know I think I'm a couple of minutes over, so I appreciate you staying with me. But here's your tips. Document your content strategy. Commit to publishing more frequently, answering your customers' questions. Map content to the buyer journey. Commit to showing the return on investment from your content marketing efforts. Build a team of storytellers and map keywords to the questions that your customers are asking. Hopefully I showed you each one of you to do that. Now, this is, you know, I told you a couple stories, but the hero of this presentation is really you. I want you to be the hero of this story. So think about how you can ask what's in it for the customer. I want you to commit to going back to your organization and trying to implement at least one of these tips. And I believe that if you do that, you'll start to meet the needs of your customers, meet the needs of your business, and hopefully you'll all become the heroes inside your own marketing department. So thank you for staying with me.